and met up with Madame Chandra, quickly explaining about the plans for the evening before meeting his friends for lunch. Chandra agreed to bring the food if Dale paid for it, which was fine with him. At lunch, he talked with his party and ironed out a few strategies for what he should say tonight. They gave him a few good ideas and conversation topics to discuss with the group. After lunch, Dale went to his daily training with Craig. His mentor had him practice his combat forms with Josh to get used to using his new and oversized weapon in combat. Luckily for Dale, the rune on it that allowed for him to lift it didn't reduce the power it had when it struck an opponent. The increased size did make it a bit more unwieldy, but also increased the range he could strike his foes with. At the end of the session, he was very happy with his new Morning Star, as well as very grateful for the tips his instructors gave him. He went to towel off when he noticed that he hadn't broken a sweat. He thought for a moment, and realized that he was also not sore or tired from the full-speed fighting. He also realized that the benefits of opening all his meridians were beginning to show. Craig nodded in approval when Dale mentioned this, and informed him that over the next few days, he would only get stronger. When his body finally got used to the changes, he would only need 2 hours of sleep a night, be much stronger, tougher, and even his capability for learning would increase. Dale took this all in stride, having heard this explanation before. He moved on to the next phase of his daily training, sitting down to cultivate. He opened himself to the essence of the heavens and the earth, and began drawing it in. At least, he tried to. When he tried cultivating from the earth around him, instead of essence, a thick corruption began to flow into him, forcing him to stop cultivating immediately. Worried that he had just damaged his center, he looked within himself and was shocked by what he saw. He had traced the flows of essence through his meridians since coming back to life, but hadn't really looked at his center. Well, not beyond a cursory check to feel his ranking. Now, looking closely, he found that his center was contained entirely in a beast core. Inspecting it mentally, he found runes delicately carved in the gemstone which allowed his essence to flawlessly integrate with his body, sending and receiving essence to and from his meridians. He searched for an explanation, but the only solution that came to mind was that the dungeon truly had messed with his body. He needed to find answers, but with a start, remembered why he was inspecting himself in the first place. He searched for any hint of the corruption that he had absorbed, but did not see anything in his meridians or center core to show that he had absorbed any of the taint. Frowning, he opened himself up and began cultivating again, and again only receiving corruption for his efforts. Quickly stopping, he tracked the corruption as it raced to his center, but right before it entered, the taint vanished. Frowning, he focused harder on his meditation and realized that there were several tiny beast cores around his center. One of them had a soft brown glow, and he realized that this tiny gem had absorbed all of the corruption he had taken in. For a moment, he was tempted to run and ask Craig about this development, but ultimately decided to keep it to himself. He tried a slightly subtler question first, just to test the waters. "Craig, why couldn't Rose cultivate before going into the dungeon?" Dale asked his mentor, explaining about Rose's dual affinity channels when Craig asked who she was.
"Oh, that explains it," Craig nodded sagely. "To cultivate with multiple affinities, you need to draw essence from a source containing both of them at the same time, else you will only draw in corruption. If she had tried to cultivate before, she would have shortened her lifespan a good deal. Let me amend that a bit. I say, same source, which could mean getting fire and earth from molten metal or lava, but a high enough concentration of both in an area would allow for cultivation."
"I see. So if someone somehow opens an affinity channel, they would need to cultivate both types at the same time. Therefore, if it were earth and fire, they'd need to be around burning earth such as lava or melted metal? There isn't a way around it?" Dale was drawing on his recollection of a half-forgotten conversation that took place months ago.
"Correct. But opening a second channel is unwise, as it can ruin people. Increase your rank too fast, and it can lead to health issues or an unstable center. Also, increasing your rank can hurt you if you do it too fast. If you keep smashing through your limits without giving your body a chance to acclimate to the new power, your flesh may not be strong enough to contain it.
Craig informed him ominously, making Dale remember his rapid, forced, advancement to the D-ranks.
That is why nobles, with their cultivation techniques that draw in so much more essence than the average person, need to constantly train their bodies at the same time. Typically, the young ones spend 10 hours a day exercising or fighting and have healers on hand to fix torn muscles and damaged flesh when they overdo it. They actually only cultivate an hour each day, but can absorb as much essence in that time as most can in a month. Also, they are the only cultivators that bother with the E-ranking.
Dale was dumbfounded at the effort that nobles had to put into their cultivation. How old are they when they get into the B-ranks? Wait, E-rank? I haven't seen anyone in that rank that I know of.
Ah, yes, the Echo rank. The E-rank is obviously between the F and D ranks. It is a process where a strong cultivator, usually their parent, echoes their cultivation technique into the target person. This attunes the new cultivator's body to essence and allows for more rapid growth, since there are less impurities for the body to purge as a cultivator increases their rank. Of course, this process has its own risks. As for the rest, Well, Craig thought a moment, ascending into the B ranks is not as easy as breaking into the D or C ranks. Just absorbing essence is not enough. You need to make a connection to a fundamental law of the universe. That is, you need to learn the true name of a concept to channel your essence through and bind your aura and cultivation base to it. This binding has to be compatible with the essences that you use, so that you can exchange your varied essences for mana.
Let me guess, Dale muttered dryly. It really hurts. Craig looked at him admonishingly, then grunted and nodded slowly.
Nothing in our world worth having is gained without pain and effort. This process, in particular, is quite punishing, which is why there are so few mages ascending each year. The connection allows mana to flow through you, replacing all bonds of essence with bonds of mana. The mage ascendant is literally ripped apart at the smallest level and rebuilt with mana. I'm told there is nothing more painful known.
Naturally, Dale shook his head. Back to my point, then. How long does it take them to reach the peak of the C ranks?
They begin training their bodies at age 5. They are shown how to cultivate very pure essence at 6, just so they don't become corrupted as they grow. At 15, they are tested to see if their bodies can survive the harsh conditions needed. Most fail, and are tested again at age 20.
Craig began his lecture, settling into a familiar cadence as he talked.
From 15 to 20, they begin to open their meridians, and their physical training is doubled. 20 hours a day. When they are tested at 20 years old, those who are deemed acceptable are given their family's cultivation techniques. Those who fail, well, they are given what are known as branch family techniques. These techniques are intentionally, deliberately not as powerful as the main family's technique. It is meant to keep them subservient to the main branch. By 22, they are expected to reach the D ranks. By the age of 25, the C ranks, at which point they are considered adults in their families. By 30, they are usually almost ready to ascend into the B rankings.
Considered children till 25? Dale was aghast. In the mountains, the average lifespan was 40 years. By 25, most couples had several children. He was considered odd back in his old village for not going out to find a wife, but he had been too busy, and that was before finding the dungeon. Now he was busy for other reasons.
Craig nodded. Not quite. They are considered children until they reach the C ranks, but some geniuses have been known to do this in their early teens. What is wrong with being considered a child, though, when you are going to live for several hundred years and you don't need to worry about income, food, or health issues? Why not?
Wow. I cannot even imagine that kind of life. I had always seen royals as pampered, spoiled brats, Dale muttered a bit too loud, making Craig wince and look around, muttering worriedly under his breath about treason. Dale looked up and noted the position of the sun, realizing that he needed to leave if he wanted to make it to his meeting on time.
Thank you, Craig. See you tomorrow, then.
So long, Craig waved.
Careful with the almost treason.
Dale made his way to the church, avoiding stumbling drunks that seemed to be everywhere. The guild was providing free beer and ale while they built defenses around the dungeon entrance, and people were certainly enjoying and taking advantage of this benefit. Walking onto the stairs, Dale was greeted by a pale, sweaty, and exhausted-looking Adam.
"Adam, are you all right?"
Dale asked his friend, concern evident in his voice.
"Yeah, just, exhausted," Adam panted. "This way."
He led Dale into the church, stopping at a door and waving him through. He seemed to fold in half as his head sank down, trying to catch his breath.
Thank you, Adam. Don't die.
Dale walked into the room, ignoring the glare sent his way. The other members of the council were there, including Tyler, who looked very nervous around these powerful individuals.
Thank you all for coming. We are here to discuss the growing population around the dungeon and what steps we need to take in order to make this a successful settlement and not just a work camp, Dale announced, taking the chair pointed at by Madame Chandra.
Dinner should be on the...
He looked over as the door swung open to reveal covered platters.
Ah, dinner is here. Thank you, Madame. Let's eat, and then we will start our discussions.
After the last plate had been cleared and everyone was sufficiently stuffed, Dale asked all non-council members to leave before resuming the conversation.
I have been failing myself and my people by foisting the responsibility of running the city onto other people. Today, I was reminded that allowing others to run my life could only lead me to ruin. Not that I think my counselors don't have my best intentions in mind, of course.
He qualified his statement as a few frowns appeared on the faces around him.
I simply think that it is time to start making this into a safe, secure settlement.
Dale, I hate to have to be the one to bring this up,
Frank cleared his throat.
But you are hardly qualified to run the area as a camp, let alone a city. If, on the other hand, you were willing to sign a few of the landowner rights over to me, I...
Frank was cut off as the others jumped in loudly, denouncing Frank and trying to explain how they were the most qualified to run the place. Father Richard was almost shouting,
"This place needs the moral guidance only I can provide."
"I can plan the organization easier than anyone. My access to logistical..."
Amber hissed.
"I am stronger than all of you,"
Chandra smirked belligerently.
"Stop!"
Dale released a roaring growl. He continued speaking to the room full of surprised faces.
"I will not be ceding my rights to any of you, or to anyone else. This is my land, and I'll fight to the god-blasted death to keep it."
He stared them down until they looked away, blushing at their behavior.
"I have already taken steps to correct my deficiencies as an administrator. Madame Chandra, I have recently come into enough money to purchase the memory stones, so please order what we discussed."
"What?"
Frank began, then coughed as he realized his constant interruptions were starting to make him look bad, as though he had ulterior motives.
"I mean, didn't we discuss that I would provide any teachers you needed?"
"You did," Dale agreed. "But I need more than just fighting instructors. Madame Chandra is taking care of the details for me, so please don't worry that I'm going to pass the cost on to you. Now, if all personal concerns can be set to the side, there is some business to discuss."
"Go ahead, Dale. I'm fairly certain you have our full attention,"
Amber chimed in ruefully. Dale nodded.
"Good. I've had some major issues come to light today. Walking around, not looking for trouble at all," Father Richard snorted softly at these words, "I came across a merchant being robbed.
Tyler, our newest counselor, can attest to this firsthand. I took care of the bodies after I stopped the thieves, but it never should have been allowed to get to that point. Dale looked around at faces that were rapidly turning to boredom. Also, I have been noticing large piles of garbage and waste. The paths, such as they are, turn to mud if there is so much as a hint of rain. Living quarters are erected haphazardly, and there is almost no organization. I need to find a new path to breakfast almost every day. The others shrugged a bit. Most of this had no effect on their lives. No one would dare try to rob them, and a simple cycle of essence made mud fall away from their feet. Sure, breakfast was important, but they all had it delivered to them in the morning. To top it off, they were nearly immune to disease due to their power. Dale looked around, shocked that the entire council, except Tyler, who was nodding along, seemed not to care at all. Dale powered onward. We need a guard force that protects the people here. Someone that knows about sanitation to take care of our issues, and a city planner that can lay the groundwork for buildings and roads. Also, we need to designate areas for bathing and cooking. Drinking fouled water again really isn't particularly high on my to-do list. Frank started talking a bit condescendingly.
Dale, I think you are putting too much thought into this without really thinking at all. For one, finding people to do those mundane jobs will be rather difficult around here. Also, how are you going to pay for this? Your personal wealth may be rather high for people your age, but it isn't enough to fund a city.
I may be able to allay your concerns, Guild Leader,
came a voice that sprang from the shadows of the room. The dark elf Brianna stepped into the light, pulling a chair out and seating herself. Only the shock of not noticing her until this point kept the others from attacking her. Frank's eyes narrowed.
Oh? Who are you, and why should I not kill you and throw your corpse in the dungeon to rot for interrupting us, dark elf?
A nimbus of mana-powered light had appeared around each of the mages in the room as soon as Brianna's presence was known. Dark elves had bad reputations, after all.
To answer your questions in order, I am Princess Brianna of the Huyn Nation, the ambassador charged with securing good relations with the person in control of the land a silverwood tree is growing upon. Also, a full member of the council.
Shocked faces looked at Dale, who nodded.
As for the second question...
Her eyes flashed, and Frank found himself blind while a blade tickled his neck. Brianna breathed softly into his ear.
Because you can't.
Vision returning, Frank looked at the elf who had not seemed to move from her relaxed position on the chair.
You're a god's blasted moon elf!
He spat on the floor.
Hmm,
was her uncaring reply.
Sorry I'm late, Dale. No one told me about the meeting. I just happened to find out about it.
Dale nodded, trying desperately not to show that he had forgotten she existed. Thank you for finding out and attending. Since I had been unable to get notice to you, I wouldn't have held it against you. You mentioned you may have some solutions to our problems.
I do indeed. I would be more than happy to provide a guarding force, one that will patrol the grounds unseen. That way, there will be no interruption to business and crime will be handled quietly. I already have several contacts on the way to fill the positions of city administrator and sanitation officer.
Her slouched, relaxed position never changed during this speech.
Pah! And what will this cost us?
Frank barged into the conversation again. Brianna eyed him like a tasty morsel.
Oh, now it is us. I do believe that you were attempting to drop the entire cost on Dale a moment ago, just so you could ignore the issues.
Frank paled a bit without looking at Dale. Brianna continued.
No, we care little for gold and such nonsense. We will need a small area to set up a barracks, an administration office, and an embassy, if it won't be too much trouble.
This last phrase was directed at Dale. You will have it. Let's allow the city planner to plot the best locations for that, Dale agreed, speaking slowly in an attempt to appear as if he were actually considering the offer. I don't want a haphazard layout like I saw in the capital a while ago. I want clear line of sight down streets and easily defensible areas. To that point, defenses. We need walls, stone roads if possible, and maybe also areas where people will be able to take shelter if caught in the weather. Winter is fast approaching. Dale cut off Frank as soon as he started blustering again. Yes, I know. It will cost money, guild leader. Anyone have an idea about how to raise the funds? There was silence for a moment. Then Chandra spoke up.
Well, I have been wondering why you have not been collecting a fee from people living here. That, and you have not been taxing those who enter the dungeon. The guild is charging their members, but there is a huge amount of money leaving, without any going into your coffers.
Dale almost knocked himself out, slapping himself in the forehead.
Seriously? Why has that not been...
He took a deep breath.
Well,
I seem to recall being told that the council was formed to protect the area and that it would have my best interests in mind. That has been proven false on yet another issue. Thank you for bringing it up now, at least. The other members winced, fearing that they were about to lose their chance to influence the area, or worse, be told to leave. Instead, Dale surprised them.
From now on, council meetings are going to be an open discussion, as we've always done in the mountains. Anyone with an issue, anyone who has a stake in this future city's success, will be allowed to speak to the council without retribution.
Dale sighed as the people around him made faces.
This means landowners, merchants, and people who live in the area and enter the dungeon. People who only show up to challenge the dungeon get no say and will pay a heavier tax on goods taken from the dungeon. My council will hear the complaints of the people living here and bring a plan of action to the city administrator to try and fix as many issues as possible. Never forget, please, that the final say will always be mine, and I hold the right to revoke any decision. I know it is not possible to please everyone, and that is not my intent. If there are real issues that have an impact on people, we need to address them. That is my focus. Start collecting a fee from anyone who exits the dungeon and make sure they sign a simple contract before they enter that will compel them to pay a fair amount. Unless there are other items to discuss, we are done here for the evening.
Dale looked around, but everyone else was shaking their heads. Anyone want off the council after hearing this new information? More fervent headshakes, and a few people murmured no.
Great. Chandra, Brianna, may I speak with you in private, please?
Dale shooed the others out. Madame, I need those stones as fast as possible.
Brianna, I need to hash out the details of our agreement with you and have us sign a man-sealed contract. Just words between us will not be enough.
Brianna snapped her fingers with a grin.
Drat.
6. The restructuring of the floors had taken a couple full days. Moving them into the positions I wanted was essence-intensive. Adding a very basic third floor took another day on top of that. The third floor had been interesting to design, because I found an underground stream that was icy cold and flowing dangerously quickly. Originally, I had planned to use the water for traps, but Danny had come up with a better idea.
Cal, what we are looking at there is a generator for water essence. The faster it moves, the greater the amount of essence that will be released by it as it flows. If you can constantly add a bit of dungeon soil to it as it flows downstream, animals and magical beasts can potentially get addicted to the essence if they drink enough. Over time, that will draw them in from hundreds of miles away.
Danny bubbled as cheerfully as the stream.
Wow! I didn't know that was possible. Obviously. So, moving water generates essence?
I threw a question her way as I began to change the course of the water a bit.
Yeah, kind of. There is a bit more to it than that. I've never really taken the time to explain that to you, have I? There are two kinds of essence around you. Loose essence and bound essence. I started calling the essence in the air loose, and you just kind of went with it.
She giggled.
I can't be curious about everything. I would never get any work done. So, what is it?
I playfully admonished her.
Fair enough. Yep. So, bound is what you can pull directly from the element that contains the essence you're after. It requires a lot of cultivation to become refined enough to move into a being's center. You remember how it is pretty difficult to pull essence from stone, right?
She bounced a question back to me.
Yes, and I would rather not have to do it ever again, if that is okay. I really like my new runes.
I looked fondly at the runes that pulled in essence and condensed it for me.
Automating tedious tasks is awesome,
she laughed.
Actually, that's a really good lead-in. The second type, loose essence, is released from its bound state by interacting with another type of element. For instance, steam essence is not really its own type. It is intermingled air, water, and fire essence that are all tightly woven together.
She paused for a moment to let me think about her words.
Since the water here is flowing so fast, it is interacting with the rock around it and releasing lots of mud essence. That loose essence is what is being collected and purified by your runes.
So I don't need my door unblocked to gain more essence right now?
I thought about how best to use this new information.
What if I use just a little for traps? If I draw some water into an enclosed space and heat it up a lot, the interaction would accumulate loose earth, water, and fire essence, right?
Well, yes, I suppose,
she started.
I cut her off to finish my thought. When the trap goes off, it would blast steam outward, adding air to the essences, I finished gleefully.
Interesting. I wonder what type of essence that might produce. Air, fire, water, and earth. I like it, though. Solid plan, Cal.
She paused a moment.
Oh, instead of a trap that only goes off when someone sets it off, why not make steam vents that blast as soon as the pressure gets to a certain point? That would add a puzzle-like area to the dungeon, since anyone passing through would need to find the pattern that steam shoots out of the vents.
I like the way you think, pretty lady. How about a tunnel for that, which groups will have to go through, or...
I paused, thinking as she blushed.
We haven't set up the third floor yet, just cleared some of the area. How about we make the third floor one huge puzzle? Instead of tunnels every which way, then individual rooms, why not one big room made of twisty-turny paths?
Like a labyrinth?
Danny offered a word that I hadn't heard before.
A what?
Labyrinth. It is a big, dangerous maze. I don't know, Cal. That seems like a huge undertaking. Not only do you need to design on a pattern for the room, but you would need to connect the walls to the ceiling and floor and make them so hard and dense that people couldn't just smash their way through.
She considered it, then turned on me suspiciously.
This isn't... You aren't... You are, aren't you?
I have no idea, but would love to be a participant in this conversation,
I stated blandly.
You are trying to turn the floor into a giant rune, aren't you?
I had considered it, I sheepishly muttered, somewhat upset that my master plan had been caught out so early.
You are gonna get us killed,
she groaned.
Fine, but under no circumstances will you activate it until we both agree to do so. Deal?
You got it, Pink Sugar.
No. Just now.
She shot down another attempt at a nickname.
Ahem, I pseudo-coughed. So, have you decided on a pattern for the chests? I'd like to make those and place them as soon as possible.
I was already starting to shape the stone on the third floor into a rough estimate of the rune I was after. After I had it correct, I planned to raise the stone to meet the ceiling, but for the moment I left it an inch high as a marker for expansion at a later date.
I think I have finally settled on a design, but I reserve the right to change it at any time.
She sent an image along our mental link, and I quickly made a small version for her to examine.
That look about right?
She seemed happy with the result.
Yes. Also, I am thinking that we should show which ones hold special gear. The low-level average chest should be dark stone. As they become more difficult to find or the monsters guarding them get stronger, we make the chest out of better material and put better stuff in them.
So, like the coin system humans use. Make the second tier copper-coated, then silver, gold, and, on the super rare ones, how about I make it gold and splash some of that potion on it that makes things glow?
I ticked my ideas off on mental fingers.
Perfect. I also particularly like the idea of hidden chests. Let's make them waste a bunch of time looking around if they are greedy. More chances to kill them. Maybe we put chests in the walls that only miners will find, as well as increase the danger. Maybe if they hit the wall in the wrong spot, it'll open a steam vent,
she offered, already planning out where to place them.
Or maybe an acid vent? I'm imaginative, too.
Oh, that's good, I agreed maliciously. We can decide on the loot to put in them later. Are you about ready to start creating the dungeon cats?
I decided to call them that instead of distortion cats, in the hopes that Danny would like them better. It didn't really help.
You know, do we really need them? I feel like some of your bashers could use beast cores at this point.
She was trying to forego the cats again. Danny, we have been over this, I gently prodded her. The bashers are only less than decent fighters. They came from prey animals, so I basically need to force them to fight. Predatory animals are ideal. They have natural weapons and the instincts to go with them. The cats are even better. They are beasts. They are intelligent. I can set them up with a beast core. Even if they die, they will be able to have memories transferred to new cores, and I can push their spirals into a new core instead of absorbing them, allowing them to return to full strength as soon as I respawn them.
I know,
Danny sighed heavily.
You are right. You've told me all this before. Just do it and let's get it over with.
That was all the permission I required, so I set about creating a new cat right away. Pulling the pattern of its aura from memory, I energized it with the subtle combinations of essence it needed in order to produce flesh, veins, nerves, tendons, bones, and after a few minutes, fur. In just a few minutes, standing 6 inches tall, a white-coated dungeon kitten stood on shaking legs before us.
Meow.
Danny screamed, breaking my concentration.
Ah! I love it! Hi, kitty. You are so fluffy!
She zoomed around it so fast that it couldn't keep its eyes on her. It tried to bat at her a few times, but after a moment, flopped to the floor and curled up. It was only 30 seconds old, so I felt it was acceptable that he was a bit tired.
Cal, this has to be the third floor boss. We'll evolve the others first. Let me play with the kitty!
She begged.
I name you Snowball, and all who face you shall feel your wrath,
she told the kitten seriously. It tiredly purred back at her.
Snowball? Come on! Imagine this place in 2 weeks, I pleaded. Look out! It's Snowball! Yeah, old Johnny got mauled by Snowball.
That's actually hilarious. I'm in. Snowball it is. I created a few more kittens, being careful to keep the fluffiness to a minimum. I did not want a repeat of Snowball. I was happy that Danny seemed to have gotten over her fear of cats, though. I inspected these new kittens and decided to try something slightly different than my norm. First order of business was to move them into another room since, well, let's just say I didn't want to hear about it for days if they, exploded. The cats should be strong enough to accept multiple types of essence, by my calculations, and, well, I was going to find out if they were anyway. Instead of pulling essence from my own core, I redirected the dense essence in my room into the cat, mainly just to see if I could. I added 1 part water, 1 part air, and 3 parts pure essence. The test subject, kitten, tensed up at first, trying to escape the intrusive injection of power, but as it started to grow, it relaxed and laid down. Pulling essence from the surroundings worked, which made me very happy since I did not have to deplete my key spiral, which creating things always had before. This had the added benefit of not depleting my store of corruption either. The cat stopped growing when it reached D-Rank 2. It was 65 pounds and 4.5 feet long from nose to its haunches, ignoring the tail. Waiting for a disaster, I watched as it stood and stretched, testing out its body. It suddenly shimmered, becoming almost insubstantial and leaping into the air. It floated along, slowly descending to the ground 36 feet away. That was a leap from a standstill. If it were running, how far could it go?
I decided to call it a cloud cat after its mixed essences. I let it walk around, quickly spawning some rabbits for it to hunt. Not bashers, of course. I didn't want to start bad habits. It hunted them by pouncing and silently gliding toward them, then lashing out from above with quick, efficient strikes. I grinned. Silent, but deadly. Next, I tried fire and earth. I wanted a magma cat. I would have called it a lava cat, but we were underground. Therefore, magma. I directed the combination of essence into it, but soon after, the cat started hissing and burst into flame. Within moments, it was ash. I was glad Danny was otherwise occupied, since that was originally the combination I'd wanted to try on Snowball. I digress. Maybe I just needed to alter what I added a bit? I directed fire and earth essence into my next attempt, but with earth essence outweighing fire by a factor of 2 to 1. The cat's body seemed to accept this combination, and it began growing. At its full size, it was 290 pounds, 5 feet long from nose to haunch. I looked closely at it, not seeing what advancements might have been made until it decided to stretch. Its claws appeared to be solid steel, and they gouged huge chunks of stone out of the ground with casual ease. It yawned, showing that its teeth had also gained this enhancement. It spotted a rabbit bounding across the ground and got ready to pounce. It launched itself like its spine was a coiled spring, shooting across the distance in a blink of the eye. That concept struck me, and so I named it a coiled cat. I was very pleased by the outcome of this experiment. Now that I had realized that varying the ratios of essence could produce different effects even with the same elements, I felt more prepared to create variations. The next, successful creation I made was a combination of water and earth, with water just a tiny bit more prevalent than earth. The one before I had used, just way too much water. I glanced at the puddle of ooze and fur off to the side and shuddered. This new successful model grew to full size, but then started losing all of its fur. It glared into the darkness around it. Totally hairless, the cat certainly looked harrowing. I sent a rabbit its way, and the cat hissed and swiped at it. 6 inches before touching its victim, the rabbit's fur and skin split as if the claws were deeply embedded, eviscerating the small animal with contemptuous ease.
"Celestial feces!"
I exclaimed, half in disgust and half in anticipation of using this against heavily armored foes. It cuddled up to the other cats, and I was very happy to see that it had a sweet disposition, despite its disturbing appearance. It started feeding the kittens with the shredded meat, and I decided on its name.
"You, my not-so-pretty kitty, are a flesh cat."
I wanted more. I kept going, failing over and over until I finally found another viable combination. I poured infernal and water essence into this cat, happily watching it grow. Its body took on a mangy look, the fur falling off it in clumps. Its coloration shifted to black speckled with unhealthy-looking white, and when it meowed, it was more of a yowl. The other cats still seemed to have no issue with its appearance and accepted it quickly. I made a rabbit for it to hunt, but it ignored it in favor of a nap. Guess I would need to see it in combat to see what it could do. Based on how it looked, I named it a Wither Cat. Danny had been trying to catch my attention for a few minutes, so I finally focused on her.
"Look, Cal! Snowball is dancing!"
Danny was hovering just out of the kitten's reach, and it was on its hind legs, slightly jumping as it tried to swat her. I burst out laughing. The mental shift from creating deadly monsters to watching a kitty dance was just too much for me. "Oh my goodness, Danny!" I laughed and laughed. "You can just keep him if you want. I don't need to upgrade him. I could keep him a kitten. Basically forever." Danny smiled, but refused.
"No, he needs to be a big, strong boss mob."
Then she sank toward the kitten and continued,
"Yes, you do. Who's gonna be a big kitty? You are."
"Right then." I focused on the cat and started pushing in fire and air essence. I had barely begun when it started to hiss and shake.
Danny's voice was dangerously calm.
Cal? Did you test this combination yet?
I was frantically adjusting the levels of essence.
Do not kill my kitten,
she hissed venomously. I tried to find a solution as quickly as possible, and struck on an idea. I already knew that I could combine more than two types of essence, so I quickly added one more. Water essence flowed into the mix, balancing the other two as the cat settled down, breathing heavily. The essence flowed into it, though I was careful to leave it a rank below me so I could still fully control it. At D rank 4, the cat was as large as its progenitor and twice as fluffy. Its size was deceptive. It weighed only 210 pounds, though it was 8 feet long. The tail brought his total length up to 14 feet. It started exploring the room, luminous white fur bouncing as it explored its new body. Danny watched it to see if it would display any unique abilities, but it seemed content to frolic around the room. After a few minutes of watching it in admiration, Danny asked,
"What type of essence does it have?"
"I think it is steam type," I answered uneasily. "Try to calm down, Cal. It survived. Danny won't shatter me."
"Really? Open up a steam vent in here. Let's see what happens,"
she directed me. I quickly obeyed, glad she had seemingly forgotten that I nearly made the cat pop. In moments, a steam vent allowed a dense fog to roll across the ground, the superheated vapor settling on every surface. Snowball looked at the steam, head cocked to the side as it took in this new phenomenon. It reached its paw into the fog as if it were playing with a new toy. Where the fog landed against Snowball, he blended perfectly and vanished, his hair moving in the same waves as the vapor. A perfect camouflage. I could not tell where he was without looking for the disturbance in the air and essence around him. Snowball stepped fully into the steam, and within seconds, only his three eyes were still visible. Even then, I could only see them because I knew where to look. He went over to the vent and stood directly in the hottest part of the steam. After a moment of staring at it, he started licking it like a salt block. I made a few rabbits in the room, and Snowball eyed them hungrily. Running across the room, Snowball had no need to attempt to remain stealthy. His charge made no noise or disturbance as long as the cat stayed in the steam. He pounced on a rabbit, and where his claws penetrated, the flesh cooked. Snowball hissed at the dying rabbit, releasing a narrow stream of superheated vapor. The rabbit cooked, dying instantly as its flesh boiled and popped. Snowball ate the tender corpse, blood marring his white coat only until he re-entered the fog, at which point the red stains either vanished or were bleached into invisibility. "I have enjoyed my day today," I mentioned to Danny.
"Ha! I wonder why,"
she chortled.
"Come on, let's go work on my plant room. I want to see if we can whip up some kind of catnip."
While she fussed over her flower arrangements and herb placement, I slowly built walls in the third floor and populated it with cats and advanced bashers, then sprinkled traps and treasure chests throughout the gigantic labyrinth. We were deep enough that I could take as much horizontal room as I wanted, allowing me to make the floor fully half a square mile. My boss area was at the direct center of the maze. I had sunk my ruined area and the silverwood tree downward slowly, then formed a clear layer of quartz over it that would magnify the view from above. Adventurers looking in from above would not be able to tell that the tree and I were lower in the dungeon until someone made the trip. Also, this way the people in the area above would be able to see two boss fights without fear of dying themselves, and the tree would still get sunlight and moonlight. The chests were ready, the dungeon was populated, and the aesthetics were pleasing. The walls in the maze weren't quite ready, but they were growing. When a light breeze laden with essence suddenly moved in my depths, I realized the door was open. Let's see how far people are willing to go for their greed today. 7.
Dale's team was working hard under Craig's tutelage, practicing moving as a unit without interfering in one another's attacks. After a little more than an hour, Tom was gasping for air,
although his oversized warhammer was feather light. Though the amount of essence he had to constantly supply to the weapon was minuscule, the strain wore him out quickly. The others in the group were in the D ranks, and several of them had multiple open meridians. Dale, a rarity, had all of his open, making his endurance and control of essence much more refined.
"You need to break into the D-ranks, Tom," Craig informed him. He mercilessly continued, "Look at those around you, still working hard while you gasp and pant, holding your knees. Are all of those muscles for show?"
"I pant. Apologize for my weakness," Tom gasped. "I shall work harder on my cultivation. I shall not rest peacefully until I am able to stand beside my team through all of our trials."
Craig nodded while the others rolled their eyes.
"Good. In that case, I do think that you are ready to open a meridian."
Tom looked up, hopefully.
"I have heard this term several times, and have seen the effects of opening several at a time with Dale. Will it shrink and collapse my body as it has with him? What does this process involve?"
Craig snorted, the first time Dale had heard anything approximating a laugh from him that day.
"No, that was a result of his essence suddenly blasting every impurity out of him at the same time. If he had been conscious, it would have shattered his mind and permanently ruined his body."
Dale choked on his laughter a bit at this revelation.
"I want you to strip as much as you feel comfortable with. Whatever you keep on will need a professional clean, or be burned," Craig warned.
Tom stripped so fast that the others didn't even have a chance to think about looking away before they saw dangling bits. Barbarians clearly did not have the same social norms of decency, and he had no issue being nude, even in combat. Craig chuckled.
"I should have been clearer. This is fine, but next time, perhaps you keep on your small clothes?"
"Nothing small there,"
Rose muttered, blushing at the shocked look the comment earned from Hans. Craig directed him to open his heart meridian, the same one Dale had started with. After several minutes of intense concentration, Tom gasped and became pale as essence rushed through him. He clutched his chest as the wave of essence wrapped his heart, spitting up blood and filth as his essence met his lungs. Black sweat collected over his body, and the air took on a tang of foulness. When he finally looked at his friends, his eyes were a deep red from broken capillaries. The blood was filling one of the sclera, giving him a frightening visage, especially with the other gore and filth on him.
"That felt horrible,"
was Tom's understatement of the day.
"The worst kind of heartburn imaginable. Then as if I were breathing dry, overheated air from a forge."
"You are a fire cultivator, yes?"
Craig inspected Tom for damage as he talked. Tom nodded, so Craig continued.
"You need to work on the purity of your essence. For the next month, cultivate nowhere but in the dungeon. The purity of the loose essence in there will dilute the taint you have absorbed. If you keep pulling in the amount of corruption you have been, there will be serious issues when you try to break into the D-ranks, not to mention the C-rankings."
Tom stepped over to the river to clean himself, and a dark elf appeared to Dale's right. He bowed, ignoring Dale's startled yelp.
"Your Grace, I have come with a daily report for you as per instructions. Would you like to hear it now or in private? There are no matters of particular sensitivity."
Dale cleared his throat and ignored Hans's pantomime of him squealing.
"Here is fine, good sir. If you are going to be bringing the report regularly, might I get your name and ask that you reveal your presence at least 5 feet, maybe 10 feet, away from me? Also, why are you calling me Grace?"
The bow deepened.
"This one thanks you for your kind regard. My name in the human language will likely be easier for you to pronounce. It is Jason. I am calling you Grace because your dealings with the Lady Brianna, as well as your holding of land, have allowed you to be granted a title from our queen, and you have been named a duke."
Jason hesitated then, in order to choose his next words carefully.
"Understand, please, that you hold no rights to inheritance, But we acknowledge that you have quite a significant influence on our future. You control the land upon which a silverwood tree grows, after all. Hence the title, as an offer of goodwill and a form of diplomatic immunity from other kingdoms. Although, to that end, I believe you also now hold the honorary title of Baron with both the Lion and Phoenix kingdoms.
Dale was nonplussed as Hans's face clouded, looking like a storm was about to break forth from him.
"And now he is a noble, too," Hans grumbled. "Of course. His head is going to swell to the size of a—"
"And what are the benefits of this position?" Dale apprehensively questioned the bowing elf.
"To ensure that there are no misunderstandings when dealing with our culture, I have been given a memory stone that will grant you our language, political knowledge of our courts, and the customs of our people. This alone would be worth several hundred gold, but our queen feels it is necessary for future dealings, as your life has been in jeopardy 16 times while conversing with our princess. Since you have been unaware of some cultural differences,"
Jason clarified for him, voice never varying from an even cadence since he had begun speaking, even when discussing the near executions. Dale started sweating a bit now, a feat that over an hour of constant combat training had been unable to replicate.
"I would like that stone very much," he rushed to say.
The elf grinned slightly and held up a small stone.
There were motes of light moving in it, not unlike a key spirals, but they obviously held a specific thought pattern.
"Your discretion regarding our politics will, of course, be appreciated,"
Jason muttered in a slightly threat-promising tone. Dale nodded and pressed the stone to his head. The light from the stone shot into his skull, creating pathways and memories in his brain that may as well have been there from birth, since they melded with his own so well. The stone shattered to glitter, and Dale stood still for several minutes while the information became a part of him. Finally, he shook himself and looked at Jason, who was still bowing.
"My deepest apologies. Please stand, Lord Jason. I am sure you realize that I did not understand that you were waiting upon my command to rise."
Rose took this moment to close her hanging mouth with an audible click.
"Dark elves? Here? And Princess Brianna is here as well?"
Jason looked over at her, and in a barely civil tone he nodded at her and responded,
"Yes, she is here, half-breed."
The others looked shocked, but Rose, and now Dale, understood how poorly elves viewed mixing of the races. Dale didn't want to give him a chance to further offend anyone or have someone attack him.
"Report."
The elf launched into his report, detailing several crimes that had been stopped and how fights had nearly started when the elves moved onto their new land and evicted those living in tents from the area. They had redirected many people along the riverbanks so that cooking water was pulled from upriver, clothes cleaning was farther downriver, and bathing was done at an even greater distance downstream. Sanitation was still an issue, but the position of sanitation officer had been filled. Garbage and refuse were being collected. The current plan was to begin dumping it into the dungeon as soon as it was open, as it would all vanish shortly afterward. Perfect solution. Dale nodded as the elf spoke, asking what had been done with the people committing crimes. He was informed that they had been delivered to Protectorate Cole, who had been appointed by the council to give judgment to criminals. Originally, Magistrate Ackman, a dark elf, had been offered to fill the position, but it turned out he was obstinate and hard to work with. Even Jason had to admit, internally of course, that even such an illustrious elf as Magistrate Ackman may not have been the best for this position. Even in the short amount of time he had been there, Protectorate Cole had proven his worth repeatedly. Cole had worked at honing his abilities in aura reading to the point where he was able to discern between truth and lies at a glance. Therefore, trials were short and efficient, and justice meted out quickly. Tom came back, dripping from the quick scrub in the river. As he dressed, he curiously eyed the elf. Jason glanced at him in return, noting his sodden state, and grimaced.
"Apologies, Your Grace. It seems we missed a bather."
Craig smoothly joined the conversation.
"My fault. I had not heard about the new rules and sent him to bathe after opening a meridian."
Jason bowed again.
I should go and warn any who were collecting water. I shall return on the morrow.
He vanished, and Dale assumed, left. Dale's team went to lunch, eating with their usual calorie-desperate gusto to the slight, yet poorly hidden, disgust of their server. After finishing, they stepped outside, where they were met with both excited and angry shouting.
"What's going on?"
Adam wondered aloud, his mind clouded with exhaustion. Father Richard had begun training him in earnest, and the mental fatigue of the training was horrendous. Dale squinted at the milling crowd.
"I don't know. I haven't heard noise like this since they first opened the portal. Shall we look into it?"
They walked at a fast yet measured pace, staying in formation as best as possible. Craig had drilled into them that if they made combat tactics a part of every daily routine, it would be easier to keep their bearing and formation while in battle. They waved down a man who was running toward the guild tent.
"What is going on?"
A happy grin flashed across his face.
"The dungeon is open!"
A sour-faced man near them overheard and growled.
"Yeah, but they are charging everyone 15% of their earnings if they want to go in. Fracking Council put it out this morning. So long, single-run retirements."
Dale looked at Hans as the complaining man walked off.
"What did that mean?"
"Most people who live in the middle of nowhere, like you used to, can earn enough by going through the dungeon a single time to retire, either from the coins they collect or by selling other things they bring out. Those whiners will still get wealthy. They just don't want to give up any money for the greater good of the people living here."
Hans shook his head. For the first time, Dale fully understood the political ramifications of what he had been doing, and the conversation devolved into the pros and cons of several nuances of the situation, much to Hans's delight. Until Hans asked a very pertinent question.
"Did you get all of this political savvy from that memory stone?"
Dale considered.
"I must have. I mean, I have been trying to learn faster, but I had been getting better at it only very slowly. Now it feels as natural as breathing to have an in-depth conversation concerning the taxation benefits of a high-yield resource center such as a low-corruption dungeon."
Hans laughed. Never had he imagined that Dale would become a true contender in political and economic debates. It normally took years of study to be able to hit the finer points of the conversation they were having. Dale wouldn't have understood half the words they were using even that very morning. They walked to the entrance to the dungeon, noting the queue of people waiting in front of the new fortifications. The walls were hardened stone, seamless, even if they had been put up in haste. There were many kill slots in the stone. These were places for weapons, arrows, or magical effects to pass through to kill any monsters that tried to escape the dungeon. The doors were stone-banded with metal, obviously made by mages as there were no seams or welds in the work. Unlike normal fortifications, these were built to keep things in and kill them, not keep things out while defending the location. There was at least one spectacular benefit to owning the land. Dale's group bypassed the line waiting to get in and went directly to the clerk. She looked up, bored.
"Guilder Standard."
Dale looked up at her as a troubling idea crossed his mind. He hoped he was wrong about what she was about to say.
"What is the difference?"
She released a long-suffering sigh.
"Oh my God. Non-guild need to pay a 15% tax to the landowner so he can throw a party or something. Guild rate is the standard flat 25%.
"Throw a party?"
A vein on Dale's temple began to throb.
"No, there is a 15% tax on everyone, and the guild takes 25% of the gross amount after that. Also, the tax is in place to build this campsite into a city so you won't have to wade through feces on your morning commute. Who sent these orders?"
Dale was trying very hard not to yell. She made a very unladylike noise.
"You have a problem? This came straight from G.L. Frank."
She finished her sentence like he was an idiot, and with that, the conversation was over.
"How interesting."
Dale had a maniacal grin on his face.
"Oh, Hans," he said in a sing-song tone. "Be a dear and send a runner for the guild leader, please. Or G.L. Frank, as she calls him." Dale, Hans began worriedly. Now, please. Hans sighed and motioned to one of the messengers who were near the entrance. He sent him off with a sad look.
Hurry,